Hi guys, welcome to the show today. I'm Caroline Steve and it's great to have you join us. We have an extra special interview today on procrastination with international author Dr. Tim Pitchell from Ontario, Canada. With nearly 20 years' experience researching and writing on this topic, Tim gives us the reasons why he believes people procrastinate and why it's an existential problem common to all of us. He gives us his tools and strategies from his years of research to kick this beast in the butt. Don't procrastinate and say you'll listen to this interview later. Do it now. But first up, here's the news for the week ending 25th of July with economist and Sky Business News commentator, Jonathan Barrett. Morning, Jono. How are you?
Morning, Caroline. How are you today?
Very well. Tell us, how did the equity markets close in New York?
Well, quite interesting, actually. When you look at it, we saw some good economic numbers. U.S. durable goods orders were up 0.7, which is a little bit higher than expected. But the market did close down. In fact, it closed down about a good 160-odd points. So quite a negative close. And I think it's leading up to what will be a very, very interesting week.
Do you think it's peaked?
Look, that's very hard to say, but yes, I do actually. when it's very hard to put a call out on a market that continues to go up. But I think when you really analyse the underlying economic themes at the moment, and it was quite interesting. U.S. durable goods orders were up, but we had a record $1.1 trillion of unfilled orders. Now that tells us that we are getting into perhaps what could be an inflationary environment. And interest rates could actually start to move higher. So when you look at that, there is that argument that's starting to say that, with interest rates moving up, that equities could come under pressure.
Ooh, so how did that flow onto the Australian market?
Look, I think if anything, the Australian market closed all right for the week, but there are a few things which are starting to loom this week which could see the market just upset just a little bit. I guess the most important thing there is the geopolitical events, obviously, in Argentina at the moment. They've got the chance to default, and that'll weigh heavily, I think, on sentiment. But more importantly, you've got 138 of the top S&P companies reporting. You've got US GDP, FOMC, and non-farm payrolls. Now, this is a very big week, very interesting. It could actually be one of the weeks that actually sets the trend for the equity markets for some time.
So what were some hot and what were some cold sectors?
I think generally speaking, and this is also quite interesting, the markets have been just ranging for quite some time. It is a phenomenon that we normally have it around this period, and that's purely because of the summer period in the States, and that's when everyone goes on holiday, similar to our Christmas summer period. And it extends itself for about 4 to 5 weeks. So really, we've still got a couple of weeks where the market might not make too much direction, which would actually help a lot of that volatility. But when you look at the sectors, it's very hard because there's been a lot of ranging and not a lot of direction. But I tend to think that more weighting, I think, in some of the precious metals, if the inflationary feel is there, and also very focused on a lot of the grain area, the wheats, the corns, and the soybeans, because they've fallen from grace down about 30 to 40% over the last 18 months. And I feel that they're starting to look cheap. So I guess if anything, they're precious metals back on the table and also some of those softs.
And what about any patterns in the charts?
The charts are very hard because they're still just in a range. So you can't really, the equity markets, that is, they've been in this range for some time. And now at the moment, we're starting to test the lower end of that range. If the trends and if the trends are there, then we should start to see a break lower. Keep an eye on about 16,700 on the Dow. That, to me, is the lower end of the range there. And if we do get a break then, you'll probably see the Aussie market will follow as well.
So the US market has possibly topped. The Australian market's going sideways. How is Europe faring?
Europe, really, it just hasn't been performing. And that's one of the big things. A lot of the economics or economies over there are just stalling, which is a big worry. And when you have growth pretty much non-existent, you start to see that the central bankers are looking for ways to actually stimulate growth. I was a little bit surprised to see that we did get small signs of that out of Germany. But at the end of the day, the whole economy in Europe seems to still be disappointing. So if anything, the opportunities, I think, still rest, obviously, with what's happening in the US and also with what's happening in China.
Any opportunities you're looking at this week, Jono?
At the moment, just really looking at those geopolitical events in the Middle East, how that'll affect oil. I actually feel that the market's certainly discounted what's happening there. If anything there, I'm just looking for that break to the downside. So if anything, it's more of a sit on the sidelines, wait for that break and then react when needed.
And is that your advice for traders this week?
Absolutely. No point getting distressed on highs and lows at the moment until we get a good trend. Keep a very tune on that FOMC meeting. And as a little bit of an out there, we are tipping for the stimulus to be reduced by $10 billion. It might come in just a little bit bigger than expected because I feel the FOMC have to get ready for interest rate rises sooner rather than later.
Jono Barrett, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Caroline.
Most traders act like a little kid in the markets. They don't know that a great trading plan is their secret weapon.
Isn't it time you grew the f*** up? Register on tradinggame.com.au and grab our free trading plan template. It's a sign of being a mature trader.
Sometimes in life you come across information which can change your direction and assist you to a higher quality of living. And this interview with Dr. Tim Pitchell could be just one of those moments. Tim Pitchell is an associate professor in psychology at Carleton University, Canada. He has researched the topic of procrastination for nearly 20 years, and he's been interviewed by The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and The Huffington Post. He's a hero of Louise Bedford's, and we have him here now, firsthand, discussing why he thinks people procrastinate and how we can build strategies to overcome it. A super polite man who is more qualified than anyone to discuss this constant human affliction.
There are actions and tensions, in the middle is the gap. We call procrastination, and that's why I'm here to rap. It is useless, needless, voluntary delay. You think I'll do it tomorrow instead of today.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Caroline.
Great to have you on the show.
Well, thanks. It's nice to join you down under.
So tell us, what is procrastination and why do we do it?
So procrastination is the voluntary delay of an intended act, even though we know this delay will probably make us worse off in the end. As I like to simplify it, is that all procrastination is delay, but not all delay is procrastination. You and I have to delay things every day. That's what happens when we set priorities. We do one thing, something else waits. But procrastination is the instance where we have the intention to do something now. We know it's in our best interest to do it now, but we voluntarily delay it even though there's a niggling feeling in the back of our mind saying, this is a bad idea. And so procrastination doesn't have an upside. Lots of forms of delay do. There's lots of forms of sagacious delay where you delay to get more information or you delay because you're not quite ready to act. But this voluntary delay of an intended act is really self-defeating. Why do we do it? Well, that's a really big question. I think we'll spend the rest of our time talking about that. But in a nutshell, we give in to feel good. It's an avoidant coping strategy and it's emotion-focused. So really, it's not a story of time management, which so many people want to say. It's a question of avoiding the task because it makes us feel better in the short term, although it comes back to bite us later. So we have to see it for what it is. It's in a short-term coping strategy. And I think for a lot of us, if you think about the first time that you learn that, you know, we don't always eat because we're hungry. Sometimes we're eating because we're trying to cope. We're trying to fill some sort of void. And it's the same sort of response. We're trying to do something with avoidance emotionally that's really self-defeating in the end. So that in a nutshell, is what procrastination is as opposed to other forms of delay and why we do it.
So just to paraphrase your students who wrote that rap song, they said it's a useless, needless, voluntary delay. You'll think you'll do it tomorrow instead of today.
Yes, isn't that wonderful they did that? I'm so happy. You know, that's the great thing about teaching first-year students is you can throw them in the deep end and they come out with a gem like that.
So what are some of the consequences of procrastinating?
Well, you know, a lot of us think it's performance. But in fact, when we look at the literature on procrastination, performance, it is usually a negative relation with performance, but it's quite modest. And that's because lots of people still pull it off. So the biggest consequence or casualty of procrastination isn't always our performance, but it's certainly our well-being. even those people, and I'll talk about students who I know best, but other walks of life as well, even those people who pull it off with the all-nighters and the last-minute efforts, really begin to despise the way they're living. And they know that it's this binge sort of work habit is really affecting their well-being, and we've found their health. We've seen in our research that people who report chronic procrastination or more habitual procrastination also report poor health. And the three reasons for that is, first of all, there's more stress with procrastination. And that stress compromises our immune system and we get more sick. We also have fewer wellness behaviors. So we're more likely to put off exercise, eating well, or even as we've learned most recently in some research coming out of the Netherlands, we sleep more poorly. We actually have sleep procrastination. And finally, procrastination in terms of health is related to more treatment delay. Oh yeah, I'll get that looked at someday. I'll look at that later. And of course, that comes at a great cost, especially with some ailments. So that's another big consequence of procrastination. Our relationships suffer with procrastination as well. You know, a lot of people think that it's procrastination is just about me. Like I'm the only person that suffers. But in fact, everyone around me gets affected by stress, right? That if you're suffering stress, other people do too. And what happens in relationships is there's a lot of broken promises and dates, so that if I don't do my work during the day, all of a sudden I'm not available that evening and I'm changing plans. And if you have a lot of last minute efforts, there's very little room for error. So a printer breaks is an example. It's a national emergency around the house and everyone's feeling the tension. So our relationships suffer a great deal. And I think procrastinators are a bit delusional in thinking that, well, it only affects me. And in a work group, you know how bad it is when you have someone who's always wanting to deliver at the last minute. Well, not everyone functions best that way. And so it's very frustrating for the rest of the team. And the final thing I want to say is that, you know, it's for me, procrastination is a deeply existential issue. Just a few days ago, my wife came home from a store and she'd bought me this, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not a plaque, but it's a wooden, it's just a piece of wood that has carved letters on it. So you can imagine you'd sit it on your desk or anywhere. Right now it's sitting on my printer. And it says simply, live now, procrastinate later. And I love it. I love it because it captures what I think is the heart of procrastination. Procrastination is not just a matter of undermining our performance, as I started a few minutes ago saying. It's that we're not getting on with life itself. Right? Live now, procrastinate later. It's tongue in cheek, but it's so true that in every world religion, there's this concept of sloth, this notion of it's a sin to be slothful. And it's because time is the most precious gift you and I have. Like, there's one thing we don't control is how much time we have on this world. We don't know what's going to end. So don't waste it. Like, this is your life. Live it. So all of these things, you know, amount to what are the consequences of procrastination. And the biggest one by far is this is your life. Are you making the most of it? Are you living the life you want to live?
Which makes me ask the question, how much do emotions cause procrastination?
Well, I think that's the heart of it. In fact, you know, the other day I got an email from someone in our engineering department who was talking about student procrastination, and he feels that his students would benefit from some time management training. And I wrote back and I said, you know, I really like your data and I see the relationships you're talking about, but it's not about time management. It's about emotion management. You know, you and I will face tasks every day and we won't feel like it. In fact, I'm a dinosaur dad. I'm going to turn 59 this fall and I have a couple of young children. I have a six and a half year old son and it's so much fun to be with him. And I'll say to him, hey, Alex, it's time to make your bed. And he'll say, I don't feel like it. I don't want to. I said, Alex, I didn't ask you how you felt or what you want to do. It's time to make your bed. Now, we all have a six-year-old alive and well in us who says things like, I don't feel like it. I don't want to. And just like the six-year-old, we think that's a reason for not acting. And that's not the way we set up a life for success, right? So it's about our emotions. And it is a matter of managing our emotions.
So how are success and overcoming procrastination linked? Obvious, but I want to dig deep.
Well, I don't think it is as obvious as people feel that, you know, all day long, every day, we're going to face tasks like my six-year-old son and say, I don't feel like it. I don't want to. We feel overwhelmed. We feel tired. We feel empty. And so we really have to have strategies to just put one foot in front of the other to achieve our goals. Because lots of times when we're in the middle of achieving them, we're not feeling like we're achieving anything. But if we can manage to stay on track like that, later that day or the next day, we look back and we see the success. And so success isn't always built out of inspiration, but as we've often learned, it's out of that perspiration. So we have to learn when we're not feeling like it to just get started. That's crucial to me. If you can learn always to internalize this, I don't feel like it, maybe tomorrow, no, just get started. Because we've learned from our research, and everyone will tell me when they hear this, yeah, a job begun is a job half done. So the success is really dependent on getting around that procrastination corner.
Okay, so that would be the first rule, first strategy for overcoming procrastination. A job begun is half done. What are some others?
Well, we often make goal intentions that are much too vague. So rather than broad goal intentions of, oh, I'll do that on the weekend, you know, what exactly are you going to do and how long does a weekend? Does it start Friday at 6 or end Sunday at midnight? Instead, make really specific implementation intentions. In situation X, I'll do behavior Y. And Peter Galwitzer is the originator of implementation intentions. He and his colleagues have done lots of studies to show they're very effective for getting our goals done. If we say in situation X, we've now put a stimulus for our behavior in the environment. In situation X, as soon as I finish this podcast with Carolyn, I'm going to do behavior Y. I'm going to go out and tend to my dogs. So the moment I hit the hang up button in our Skype call here, I don't have to think about it. I know where I'm going. And if you can structure your day around in situation X, I'm going to do behavior Y, you've got a goal structure that's much more effective than just, yeah, I should feed my dog sometime this morning.
Any other strategies?
Well, the emotion-focused coping strategies are huge, that you have to recognize you're not going to feel like it. But a lot of times what you have to do preemptively is manage distractions. Right? Like, you can't set yourself up for failure. So if you're really trying to do some work where you need some concentrated attention, you have to shut the phone off so that social media is not constantly calling you and that you have distractions around you, even if it's just your favorite songs on in the background. Now, there are individual differences here. Extroversions like higher levels of stimulation, but even among extroverts, you'll recognize that stimulation is one thing, but things that actually grab your attention are another. So you have to preempt that which tempts. It's really important not to set yourself up for failure that way.
Two more strategies.
Sure. Well, in one of my most recent podcasts on the I Procrastinate podcast, I interviewed a colleague, Joel Anderson from Utrecht University in the Netherlands. And Joel talks about extended will. Extended will is like extended cognition. And that simply is the notion that if I said, what's 3 times 3, you'd say 9. I'd say, what's 364 times 873? You'd ask for a piece of paper and a pencil, perhaps, or a calculator. That paper and pencil is extended cognition. You're extending your ability to think with these tools. So Joel and Joe Heath from the University of Toronto have argued that, well, we can think of extended will, where you have to use things in your environment to set yourself up for success. So you have to make the kind of things that might take you away from your work more difficult to do, and the kind of things you're trying to do easier to, lower the threshold for it. So if you're procrastinating from exercise, for example, make sure your exercise clothes are right in your face so that there's no excuse for not getting started. Like, they're right there. Put them on, for goodness sake. And so you don't depend on just yourself that way, or at least just your own willpower. And in the saying just yourself, I've come to a fifth one, and that's, you know, use social support when you can. And I'll take exercise as another example, but you can think of other ways that you can do this in your own life, that many of us can't exercise for ourselves, but when we get an exercise partner, well, we'd never let that other person down. We'd never negate or fail to meet that social obligation. So, you know, finding social support where you can, and it's a delicate balance. I think sometimes you can feel you've got someone now who's nagging you, but instead you've got to set it up so that you're getting reinforced by someone else and you're feeling that social support. So if you can put all those together, this feeling of, I'm just going to get started, I'm going to recognize my negative emotions, I'm going to set really specific goals, I'm going to preempt that which tempts, I'm going to use social support judiciously, you can see how strategic this is and how all of those things dance together. You know, one strategy applied once will not fix anything. It's a constant notion of, okay, I have a whole toolkit here. what tool is necessary to do the job.
One of the things you mentioned in your work is that you should use procrastination as a sign sometimes to seek out work that's more meaningful. And we actually say that a lot to our traders because they've decided to come on board to learn how to trade because they're lacking meaning in their work and they're finding trading is a way to empower themselves and live a life that they really want to lead. How important is the meaningful work?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in life, it's always a balance between meaning and manageability. You can't have one without the other and be successful because things that are very manageable, you know how to do them. You think, well, why bother? Or things that are really, really meaningful, like they're connected to your values, but you don't know how to do, you don't know how to manage them, won't get done either. So you really constantly have to make sure that you've got this meaning and manageability trade-off balanced. And so, yes, at times, procrastination is a symptom that, you know, I'm not living the life that I want to do. I'm not doing these things because really, like, who would? Why bother? So I think it's really a great thing when someone comes to recognize that there are some things that fuel them. And then oftentimes you find the procrastination just disappears because, you know, you're driven now. You found kind of, in a sense, you found your calling. You found things that are meaningful to you. And then what you're searching for is just, you know, how do I do this more effectively, which I think a lot of your podcast is about.
It is. So very quickly, last three final pieces of advice for people who want to overcome procrastination.
I'm going to talk a little bit about willpower. You know, so far I've talked about cognitive strategies like making more effective intentions. I could add in there now, you have to watch the negative self-talk that many of us will, we won't recognize that little dialogue going in our heads about, I'm so going to fail, or this isn't going to work, and I can't be certain. Life is full of uncertainty, and when we let that negative self-talk run in our heads as a script, it really defeats us. And so a lot of us have to start with that. And in fact, if you get into a counseling relationship, that's where a psychologist might work on terms of looking at how you're reacting to things and challenging that negative self-talk, because most of the time it's very irrational and it leads to irrational things like procrastination. A final thing I might suggest, and it relates very much to willpower, is that, you know, we have to keep ourselves fueled. And that means we have to sleep well, we need to exercise, and we need to eat well. Not surprisingly, when you study procrastination, you're studying motivation and you're studying health. Because those people who don't keep themselves feeling strong are going to want to delay as a coping strategy. So it's really important to practice some basic health habits. And one of them is getting enough sleep. And another is getting plenty of exercise and eating well. Because when you're feeling strong, you're less likely to want to give in to feel good. We all know that when we're kind of at the end of our rope with willpower and feeling weak, that's when we say, oh, I'll feel more like it tomorrow. Poor future self will have to bear the burden. So let's make sure that present self has all the resources that he or she needs to do the job.
Tim, fabulous talking with you. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Carolyn. Nice to meet you, if only virtually across the world.
If there are any concepts in this interview you would like to explore further, Tim has a very popular podcast and blog, which you can visit as a free resource at iprocrastinate.ca. He is also the author of the book, Solving the Procrastination Puzzle. That's all we have for you today, guys. I'd like to thank our very special guest from Canada, Dr. Tim Pitchell. Stay tuned next week for lawyer Rob Belander on the very important topic of asset protection. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team here, thanks for your company. See you next time.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.